The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. Just approaching, in fact, just turning 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 29th of June, 2023. A very good morning to you. How are you getting on? I hope you're all very well indeed, and I hope you're involved in the show over the next 3 hours. It's a busy one as always. Amber Barrett's going to be joining us ahead of her heading out to the World Cup representing Ireland and Donegal, of course. Following on from our conversation with Des yesterday, we speak to a listener whose daughter has battled with ME and is improving. We'll also have an appeal from Angada Shia Connacht as it relates to that ongoing incident at Sleeve League. There's a conversation a little later on about plans to tackle gambling on an all-Ireland basis. And we'll be speaking to Vicky Gill, who won gold at the Special Olympics. And there's also going to be more information on that controversial move by government to have all of our data stored, our mobile data stored for a year. That, and as I say, so much more besides. I just wanted to give you a sense of what you can enjoy over the next 3 hours. We're also going to be giving away tickets to our premiere, an Irish premiere of Elemental, the new Disney film. We had one winner already on Monday. He was excellent. Shall we have a wee listen? Just to give you an idea of what's going on here. Here he is. This was sent in on Monday to us.
Hey there, I won the ticket for him because I'm very good to my dog, BJ.
That's it. That's all we needed from you. And you and I think it was a cousin and brother and sister and a parent, I think, is going anyway. Either way, that was our Monday winner. The lines are open for that again as well. I'll give you more details of when and where. But it's a proper premiere of Disney's latest film, Elemental. If you want to be with a chance to win, then send in a video or a voice message of your young person saying why. All you have to do is be good to your dog, to 086 60 25,000. We can have a wee bit of fun with that as well. And it's family tickets to the premiere, but we're conscious that everyone's family is made up in different ways. So we'll work with you to make sure no one misses out, if you get where I'm coming from, right? Okay, right. Let's look at the newspapers. It is a Thursday, which is always a busy day, isn't it, for the newspapers. The Derry People, Donegal News, they lead with Sleeve League probe continues. Gardaí were last night expected to make a decision on the next stage in their investigation into alleged assault in Sleeve League. The popular tourist area yesterday remained closed off to the public in the wake of the alleged incident in the Sleeve League Killybegs area, which occurred sometime between Saturday, June 24th, and the following evening. A major search got underway on Monday morning at Sleeve League, which is the setting for Europe's high sea cliffs. The area, which is usually busy with tourists, was closed off by Gardaí to facilitate searches by multi-agency groups, including the Irish Coast Guard, the Rescue 118 helicopter and the Donegal Mountain Rescue Team. A house in the Killybegs area has also been sealed off since Monday. Forensics officers have carried out a search of the property. As I say, we'll have an appeal from Angada Shia Connacht very shortly on that. Hopefully, I think it would be very helpful at this point, is if we had just some more information as to what is going on. The Donegal Democrat leads with that story also, so I'll go inside to read a court report. A man who is charged with causing €130,000 worth of damage to a house in an arson attack has been given one last chance after breaching his bail conditions. Glenn Friel, a 23-year-old whose address is given as no fixed abode, was arrested on Monday and brought before Tuesday's sitting of Letterkenny Circuit Court, where a bail application on his behalf was made. The court heard that Friel has committed four offences, including arson, since the incident in Killybegs on April 22nd, 2020. He pled guilty to that offence. In objecting to bail, Gardaí informed the court that Friel has not signed on at a Garda station since, despite being due to do so twice a week. Well, I'll get down to the findings of the judge. Friel took to the witness box and said he hadn't appeared at court on two dates in December 2022 as he wasn't well. He told the court that he hasn't worked since last year. Friel said he was unaware that he was due to sign on and told Judge John Aylmer that he was prepared to abide by conditions set by the court. Mr. Nolan asked the court to be as lenient as possible. Judge Aylmer noted that Friel wasn't hiding from Gardaí and has a very significant history of mental health issues, and he will give him one last chance. Okay. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning tells us that the GoFundMe campaign founded in response to the Chrysler tragedy that raised almost €700,000 saw the funds distributed to the intended recipients in recent days. A total of $693,000 plus was raised, and a final tally of $661,000 plus was distributed once the GoFundMe and legal fees were deducted. The campaign was initiated by Jared McFadden from Ards Chrysler while he was resident in Brisbane, Australia, and was the second largest fundraising event in Ireland on the platform in 2022. The GoFundMe account alone raised $519,000+ to help the families of the deceased and injured, but a significant amount of money was added to that tally from a number of fundraising events that took place locally, nationally and internationally. It was a superb response, and it's good to see that all that money now has been distributed to those for whom it was raised. The Derry News, their headline is mostly a picture, a tragic picture. Tributes paid to Derry teenager Caitlin McLaughlin. Caitlin was a light to her friends. And the picture is the coffin of 16-year-old Caitlin being carried into St. Joseph's Church for Requiem Mass. On to the Nationals now, and it may not surprise you to learn that the RTE story is everywhere again. Not just the front, but all over the insides of it. So we'll just start with one of them, the Irish Times here. RTE chairperson Sinéad Raglia has acknowledged shocking governance failings in the national broadcaster as it faces into a deepening conflict with Star presenter Ryan Tuberty over hidden payments in a deal with Renault. Facing into a second week of crisis after saying it published misleading information about Mr. Tuberty's pay for years, RTE told the Oireachtas Committee on Media yesterday that it is untenable for him to return to his radio show while the controversy remains unresolved. Now, they never said that, by the way. That's a bit of a leap from the newspaper, because I watched pretty much all of it. The acting DG wouldn't really talk about Ryan Tuberty's future. He simply said that it would be impossible for him to be on the radio at the moment from an editorial perspective whilst he was at the heart of a controversy. Well, questioned for 4 hours at the Oireachtas Media Committee, the board chair said she personally has come to lack confidence in the organisation's culture, saying it must change in the wake of the debacle. It is shocking. This is just a complete lapse of governance, she told TDs and senators. It's a culture that's in there that accepts, well, that's approved by the Director General, so I'm not going to talk about it. And I think all the people who now would agree that's wrong. So you would think, wouldn't you, that the culture's changed? Well, it hasn't really, because Patrick Kielty's been signed up to present the Late Late Show. But of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people that were there, one of them had negotiated the deal, and were the contract signed? The chairperson didn't know. The acting attorney general didn't know. They didn't know if Patrick Kielty's contract had been signed, and then it fell to the head of finance to say, "Well, yes, it was." I thought that was remarkable. They talk about a culture of siloing. You know what that means effectively is people do their own thing and there's no communication. And yet here we have the most latest contract being negotiated, and it's siloed as well. You had the chief financial guy knew, but the acting DG didn't, and neither did the chairperson of RTE. And then down to critical questions like, why were these documents, what are they called again, these invoices, why were they down as consultancy fees? Well, everyone's gone that would know, except one person, who was Geraldine O'Leary, who was there, but she couldn't remember. That's the bit she couldn't remember. She could remember that there was an urgency, she could remember the amount, but she was the only person of all of them that could tell us as to why these were signed as consultancy fees. She had a lapse of memory in that regard. What else happened at it that was really quite interesting? There was lots. It's hard to put my finger on it. It will come as the morning goes. As the morning goes on, I'm sure. The organisation now faces the prospect of a contract dispute with Mr. Tuberty, former host of the flagship Late Late Show programme. Well, that's another interesting thing, because his contract status changed throughout the course of the 4 hours. It began with he was out of contract, by the end, and someone must have been getting text messages off the back of Ryan Tubridy having a close sports source speaking out, it turned out he was still in contract. The radio portion of his contract was still in place. But at the beginning, the acting DG very, very clearly said that he was out of contract, that a new contract was being negotiated, and that those negotiations, like all negotiations, had been suspended pending review. But by the end of the conversation, he actually was still being paid. He was still in contract, and it just wasn't quite as it was being laid out. But anyway, listen, if you watch that, if you're interested, let us know. 086 60 25,000. The Independent is wedged with that stuff too. So I've eked out another story here. It's a bit of a shocker here. More than a quarter of emergency beds for the homeless are currently occupied by employed people, according to the Dublin Simon community. So emergency beds, obviously, are people who don't have a house, don't have somewhere to stay. They avail of the emergency beds, but one in four of them actually have a job. Cleaners, security staff, taxi drivers, van and lorry drivers, scaffolders, electricians, construction workers, healthcare assistants and carers, shop workers, barbers and bar workers are among the workers using the service. Staff at Dublin Simon said increasing numbers of working people have nowhere to live. On a night earlier this month, 33 of the charity's 129 emergency beds were occupied by workers. The charity has said the growing phenomenon can be attributed to a number of factors, including the scarcity of suitable accommodation, soaring rents, the wider cost of living crisis, and notices to quit coming to the end of their terms. I think that's really, really shocking. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and the state is facing a legal case over its decision to compel telecommunications providers to retain the data of all citizens due to security concerns. Earlier this week, Justice Minister Helen McEntee obtained a High Court order requiring phone companies, effectively, such as Three and Vodafone, to retain data, including user traffic and location data, for 12 months in order to safeguard the security of the state. Now, if you aren't aware, I am aware, I don't really mind it, but if you asked me, right, because I haven't switched off, if you asked me precisely where I was on any given day at any given time over the last 10 years, I could tell you exactly where I was, because I could go into Google Maps, I could go into Activity, which you can do now, get your phone out, go into Google Maps, go into Activity. If you haven't switched it off, very few people do, it logs your movements all of the time, all of the time. It knows exactly where you are, what you're doing. So you could give me any date, any time over the last 10 years, and I could tell you precisely where I was at that time. If I was in the car, I could tell you in the car. If I was walking, I could tell you if I was at home, because all of that data is stored. So I don't really mind that, because I'm not really up to anything that bothers me. I don't think an awful lot of people realise that level of tracking is in your pocket, but it is. But anyway, even if you don't like that, you switch it off, the government will have full access to what you do, where you are for 12 months. Ms. McEntee was able to secure the order because she was satisfied there existed a serious and genuine present or foreseeable threat to the security of the state, which I think it's important we know what that is. It was also secured on the basis of the Communications Retention of Data Act. The High Court hearing was held without representation from other concerned groups in camera, meaning there was no one else present at the hearing, which is, again, really quite remarkable. TJ McIntyre, an associate professor at the UCD School of Law and chair of Digital Rights Ireland, confirmed that he would be bringing a case on behalf of DRI against the state over Ms. McEntee's move. And I believe TJ is going to join us later on the show to tell us what his concerns are and what the basis of that action he takes might be. I think that's something we should all have an interest in. As I say, I'm not particularly concerned, but others may well be. The Irish Farmers Journal, finisher frustrations mounting as beef prices continue to fall. Irish beef finishers are currently losing €300 a head on store cattle purchased this spring. Fears are now growing about the knock-on effect for the autumn weanling and store trade. Bullock base prices have dropped to €4.90 a kg, with heifers at €4.95 a kg to €5 a kg. There are indications of further price cuts to come. The annual summer price poll is 6 weeks earlier than normal, with prices now 20 cent a kilogram to 25 cent per kilogram back on this time last year. And that's something we discussed with the ICSA earlier in the week. Patrick Kilty, this is in the Star today. Patrick Kilty's salary as Late Late host could be made public as early as tomorrow. As it emerged, he's not opposed to the idea. Now, Ryan Tuberty, I'm not sure that he confirmed that he would be comfortable with all of his financial dealings being made public, but they were. Patrick Kilty apparently has to agree before we find out how our money's being spent, which I think really is quite remarkable, that we have one individual that can really block whether or not we know. Nothing against Patrick Kilty, it's just the setup. It comes after Fianna Fáil TD Niamh Smith questioned the RTE board yesterday on how soon they'll be making the Northern Irishman's salary public ahead of the Debbie hosting the Friday night chat show in September. Now, if I was a betting man, and sometimes I am, not much though, I would say he will never take over that role for a number of reasons. A, why face that scrutiny? B, the toxicity of this controversy? C, it would be a tough gig anyway. B, he doesn't need it. You know, I mean, we haven't even dug into what expenses he's going to get for travelling to and from London. Personally, if the figure's high, if it's in the same ballpark as Ryan was getting, I have a really good sense that, I just don't think he'll ever present that show. But anyway, we could know Friday what he's earning. I'm not really interested in what he's earning, but some people are. Right, this is a story I think that will annoy quite a few people, but I'll read it anyway and see what you think. A Garda has appeared in court accused of dangerous driving and endangerment of life. This is the Irish Sun. Garda John Francis Ryan of Talla Station is charged after a probe into the deaths of three burglars in a collision on the N7 in Dublin on July 7th, 21. Dean McGuire, Carl Freeman, Graham Taylor, they all died instantly when their BMW burst into flames following a head-on crash with a truck while they were driving on the wrong side of the road fleeing Gardaí. Now, a file was submitted to the DPP by GSOC, which investigated the crash. They then directed a prosecution over the pursuit of the three men who were members of a Talla gang. Now, Garda Ryan yesterday appeared before Judge Joanne Carroll at Dublin District Court. He's accused of endangerment of life and three dangerous driving raps. When the case was called, though, he stood next to his solicitor, Elizabeth Hughes. However, the judge then asked if there was a representative for the DPP. Designated GSOC investigating officer Sean Campbell said there was a request, and there does not appear to be anyone here, he added. I've been into the office and I don't believe that there'll be anybody here. Crazy stuff. The DPP simply didn't turn up. A wasted day for that Garda. More stress, I'm sure, for all involved. And that was adjourned then on October 4th for a plea. Maybe the DPP might get off their bums and get along to that. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, EU chiefs, our overlords, are to push ahead with controversial plans to turn the euro into a digital currency, despite banks warning that is wide open to fraud. The European Central Bank has been pursuing a digital euro currency since 2020 in a bid to plug a gap that could be exploited by private firms or other central banks. Supporters claim it would complement cash, increase the speed of transactions and reduce costs for financial service providers by shifting spending away from physical infrastructure in favour of digital finance. But German MEP Markus Ferber branded it a solution in search of a problem, while fears of a financial crash due to technological instability or stability of a digital system were also raised. And it does sound very much like a large step in the direction of us going cashless. That's how it feels anyway. Right, OK, loads to get through. Stay right where you are. We're joined on the programme by Superintendent Karen. Well, we'll go to that in a moment, will we? OK, we'll go to that in a moment. Just to remind you what's coming up on the... Do you have those other comments or you can't bring those into me now? Just to remind you what's coming up on the programme, Amber Barrett's going to be joining us in this hour as well, so stay tuned for that. We'll get a reaction to the Donegal woman and her selection on the Women's World Cup squad. Are you excited about that? Let us know, 086 60 25,000. Right, okay. So I'll do the less serious stuff first, and that's just to remind you of the quiz, because we'd love a big entry today, because hopefully now your young ones are at home and they're not bored yet and you're all having a bit of fun and happiness together. Well, in celebration of the school holidays, we here at Highland Radio, in conjunction with our great friends at Eclipse Cinemas and Walt Disney Studios, are giving away two family passes each day to the movie premiere of Disney's Pixar's latest movie. It's Elemental. It's a cracker, okay? It's in Eclipse Cinemas on Wednesday the 5th of July at 3 p.m. So whoever wins or whoever goes along to the... who goes along to the premiere will see it days before anyone else can see it. It's a full premiere thing. So we're inviting the children to have fun and come dressed up as your favourite Disney character or ready for the red carpet. Maybe they've got a little tux. Who's to say? I don't know. We're going to have plenty of popcorn and treats in store for all to make your premiere experience all the more special. So for children that want to be in with a chance of winning this amazing prize, all they need to do in conjunction with their parents or guardians is send us a WhatsApp video or voicemail to Highland Radio's WhatsApp number. That is 086 60 25000, and tell us why your family should win a place. Winners will be announced at the end of each show. Disney Pixar's Elemental opens in cinemas on July 7th, but they'll get to see it on the 5th. Right, so send in your videos or voicemails. Tell us why you should win. And as I say, we're going to be flexible with the family passes thing to make sure that it's all they have with them, who they want with them. Do you get where I'm coming from? Right, okay. We can say good morning now to Superintendent Karen Duffy from the Ballyshannon District. Good morning to you, Karen.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. Okay, so what can you tell us as it relates to the ongoing Garda operation, multi-agency operation as it is, in the Sliabh League stroke Kittybegs area?
Well, in Garda Síochána are currently investigating an incident of an alleged assault that happened in the late hours of Saturday the 24th of June into the early hours of Sunday the 24th of June in the Kittybegs and Sliabh League area. Two persons were arrested and they have since been released from Garda custody. Garda are continuing their investigations and we're appealing for anybody that has dash cam or video footage on phones or CCTV footage in their house that may have seen anything acting suspiciously for those times in around the Kittybegs, Dunkaneely, Kilcar or Sliabh League area.
Now, of course, I would never, especially with an ongoing investigation, wish to put anyone on the spot, Karen. That's not my intention. But people, the listeners, might be a little bit confused as to the vagueness of the Garda appeal versus the extensive and quite detailed coverage in the media. I'm not asking you necessarily to talk to that, but can you give listeners an understanding so they can understand operationally the difference in what they're seeing and hearing and reading?
Well, I can't comment on that at the moment. It's an ongoing investigation. You know, we have a scene up at Sliabh League that is currently closed off to the public, which would be standard in any investigation. And Garda are carrying out inquiries in relation to that incident.
And do you expect more details to be released anytime soon, or is it as the investigation unfolds?
It will certainly be as the investigation unfolds.
Okay, Karen, thank you very much for that. That's Superintendent Karen Duffy from the Ballyshannon District. 086 60 25000 is our text number, but actually really what I meant to say there is to give the Garda number. I'm just so used to reading our number out. Anyone with information is asked to contact Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071985 8530, or that Garda confidential line 1-800-666-111. Right, okay. I'm really pleased to welcome onto the programme now Amber Barrett. She, along with Kira Grant, have been selected on the Ireland team for the World Cup finals in Australia. Amber, congratulations, because, you know, especially at elite sport level, nothing is guaranteed. So you must have been delighted to get the confirmation that you have your seat on that plane.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely been, you know, a long time since the qualification in October. And I think the last few weeks, everybody's just been, I suppose, very nervous around training and just anxious because, you know, at the end of the day, there's only 23 that get officially selected, plus the three training players. And of course, to be one of those is an extremely proud moment for me and my family.
Is this the pinnacle of your career in your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, at this moment in time it is. But at the same time, you know, I don't want it to be the only thing that we achieve. You know, I think at the end of the summer, if we turn around and say that we had a really good World Cup, I think then that will topple it once again.
What is a good World Cup, Amber, for you? I mean, what are the expectations? Do you go, are you in the dressing room or at the team meeting saying, look, at, you know, let's not rule anything out? Or do you set targets? How does it work in the world of football heading into a major tournament like this?
Yeah, I think most importantly is that you don't rule anything out. I think you can't limit yourself anyway. But at the same time, you're not saying, all right, well, we know we're definitely going to win it. Like, that's fixed. You know, we're very realistic about our targets. I think probably the most important one is to get out of the group, because I think if we get out of the group, then knockout football is a very different kettle of fish and anything can really happen there. And I think definitely looking at the group we have, to get out of the group would be a huge achievement. So I think right now everybody's just solely focused on that that first game against Australia in Sydney in front of 80,000+ people, and you know, making sure that they have a very difficult start to their tournament.
And it's a toughie, isn't it? Because it sounds like just the perfect dream. You're playing in the opening game against the hosts, 80,000 people there. God knows how many of them might be Irish. It may indeed feel like it might feel like a home game to some extent. But you can't get caught up in that either, because you're in business mode. You're on the pitch. You're sort of looking to win. So I suppose there's a psychology there. You have to get that balance right, don't you?
You do. And in the middle of all that, as much as, you know, knowing about your task and kind of not getting caught up, you also have to take it in and enjoy it. Because, like, how often do we, especially as female footballers, get to stand in front of 80,000 people in a stadium playing the game that we all love? I think, you know, we'll definitely not take anything for granted in that regard. But I think the biggest risk that all teams have going to the tournament is getting caught up in the excitement of everything and, you know, having that opportunity where at the end of the game and the game passes you by. You know, that's certainly something we don't want to happen. But, you know, I think there's going to be pressure on everybody. I think probably on the first game a wee bit more pressure on the Aussies, because it is the opening game and they are the hosts, you know, so everybody is, you know, backing them to the hills, really. So
the pressure's on them, really, isn't it, to some extent? Or to a great extent, actually.
It is, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, we're very aware of that. But at the same time, you know, there's pressure on us because, you know, we have a game plan that we're good at and we need to stick to it. We need to make sure that we get the most out of it. And also there's pressure with us. You know, we're playing against arguably the best female striker in the world in Sam Kerr. So, you know, it's going to be pressure on both sides, but it's definitely something we're going to relish.
Talk to me a little bit about your form, because you got on the score sheet twice at the weekend, which was fantastic, fantastic for you. You weren't scoring as freely for the club, but that obviously can depend too on how the team is set up and where you're playing. So for those who don't know, talk to me a little bit about your club form going into the most recent friendlies and then sort of on into this competition, Amber.
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing is that, you know, bar the goals on Thursday night, I hadn't scored since the qualification goal in October. And I think, you know, everybody looked at that straight away and said, well, you know, that's not very good form for a striker. But the problem was, for a lot of that, I wasn't playing as a striker. I was playing as a right back. And then after Christmas, I had a little issue with my shoulder. And then just getting back into the team didn't happen. I found that I was being left out. I think sometimes a little bit unfairly, but you know, I was also in a team that wasn't creating any chances or creating very, very little. And I think even towards the end of the season, I was coming on in games that were already done and dusted in regards to us not winning it. So, look, it's not to point blame at anybody. Of course, as a striker, you don't want to go that long to score. But, you know, you also need opportunities. And I think they were very far and few between. So I think after Thursday, you know, that little bit of confidence comes back to you and it's still such a lovely feeling to score for your country.
I would say one feeling I will never enjoy. And does that require then the Republic of Ireland manager requiring a bit of understanding of you and some of the situations that you talk of that maybe sort of, limited your opportunities to score? Vera needs to know you and what you're capable of when played in certain positions on a certain stage.
Yeah, and I think I had a very open and, you know, honest relationship with Vera in that regard. Like, she always, you know, would check in when I didn't play as much. She would be asking, you know, what was going on. And I think from, you know, listening to things I've said and you know, other stuff that she's heard, I suppose, she was very understanding of my situation. And it's football as well. Like, I think people automatically look and say, oh, she's not playing, she's not good enough. But you've no idea what happened during the week and, you know, what happened on training day today, or maybe they picked up a knock, and all these little things, they all manifest into factors of not playing. But I think being able to have an open conversation with Vera really benefited me. And I think at the end of the day, Vera knows from, you know, we've been working together now 4 years, that she knows that, you know, she can rely on me for the big moments, and I plan on continuing to do that as long as I can.
This competition is big for individuals like yourself. It's big for the teams, but I think it's big for women's football as well, isn't it? You know, because there's been a great forward momentum, and I think this really could throw the game into the stratospheres over the summer.
Yeah, I think if you go back to the last World Cup, I think what came from that was unbelievable. Then you had the Women's Euros in England. I think what happened there, what it done to England, football in England, and just, I suppose, the other countries took note of it and says, right, we need to really up our game. And I know from playing in Germany at the time, that they really took it. They were like, they felt that their standards in women's football had stagnated a little bit, so they needed to now improve them in the way they wanted to. And I think going forward, that was the plan. I think, to be honest with you, Greg, I think I'm so excited for what's going to be post-tournament, what it's going to mean for the world of women's football. I think even since our qualification here, the amount of girls that have got involved in football, I think there's, you know, there's just so many players and girls willing to get involved now because they've seen something and they're like, I want to do that. I want to be part of that. And it's so great. And we have that responsibility as well. So I think not only do we owe it to ourselves to create a legacy at this tournament, we owe it to everybody else who wants something to do when they're older and to have that dream of playing professional football, you know, because it is a brilliant dream to have.
Yeah, and it's amazing how it's just, you know, like, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls that I would know, family and stuff, and they're kicking a ball around in the yard and they're pretending to be you. They want to be you. If you can see it, you can be it. You know what I mean? That's a beautiful bonus for your career and what you're doing for yourself, to be so important to these young people that they can relate to you. You know what I mean? It's a great thing, I think.
Yeah, and you know, we were at an event last night in the Mansion House, and they talked about a few years ago how when they asked a group of young girls, you know, who their idol was, they all said Sonia O'Sullivan, because she was the only one they could actually think of, and she was the only one they could actually say that that's the one that they know. Whereas a similar, you know, question was asked recently, and you know, Katie Taylor, Kelly Harrington, players of the Irish hockey team, Irish football women's, Gaelic footballers were all listed in this. And it just shows you that, you know, when they see the achievement, they see the success, you know, they want to get on board with it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the young fans are the ones we need to clue into, because they're the ones in 10 years who are, you know, we're going to be paying tickets to go and see them play. So I think that's a really important thing to have as well.
Yeah, but too, as a Donegal people, I mean, heard Mark English on recently in Athletics. We were chatting on this show to Jason Quigley on the world stage in boxing, a global stage a couple of days ago. And now we're talking to you and Kira as well, you know, taking to the world stage for our tiny little corner of the tiny little island that we live on. Like, it's amazing what we're doing here in Donegal, I think.
It is, but you know, Greg, I think one thing about the Donegal people is that we never in our lives have had anything handed to us, and we fight for everything we get. And I think that's the mantra that, you know, I know myself and Kira definitely take with us, you know, that we don't expect anybody to give us, you know, hand us anything. And I think having that attitude is just something that the Donegal people are just that wee bit more hardened than a lot of the ones down the country. Like, if only the Dubs had our mentality now, they'd be flying. But like, it's just the way it is. And you know, as you said, you look at the size of Donegal, and I suppose you look at the facilities in Donegal, they've really improved over the last year, but for a long time they weren't there, but yet they were still producing people who were going to represent Ireland at the biggest stages in the world. And I think that sums Irish people and Donegal people up very, very well.
Yeah, what happens for you now? Like, can we wrap you up in bubble wrap and cotton wool and stuff? Or, you know, like, do you walk around on eggshells for the next couple of weeks?
Well, no, not really. Like, it's we're back on training today. We had a wee bit of, like, a down day yesterday, and training today, training tomorrow. And then next week, we're obviously planning for the France game. But, like, Friday next week, Saturday next week, we fly out to Australia. So, like, the turnaround has been absolutely, it's been lightning, to be honest with you. And even coming into camp 2 weeks ago, you know, we were still like, oh, Jesus, you know, it's still 3 weeks until we fly. But it's Sunday now, it's a week away. So it's luck, you just have to embrace it and enjoy it. And this is exactly where everybody wants to be.
All right, I'll leave you with a couple of messages that you won't get on Off the Ball or on RTE. All right, you'll only get it on your own local station. All the best from the Butler sisters, Margaret and Selene Guidor. It was a great privilege to meet you at the cousin's wedding. Now, you're not going to get that on the off the ball, right?
No, definitely not.
And well done to all from all in Milford. The flags will be flying for you. There's going to be a great buzz. It's not just Milford and the surrounds, of course. It's going to be right across the county and country. It's really exciting thing to look forward to. Thanks for your time. I know you're busy and you're down with the team and what have you. It's been lovely having you on. All right, take care of yourself. That is Amber Barrett. She, along with Kira Grant, selected on the Ireland team for the World Cup finals in Australia. She's one of a 23-strong squad for next month's competition. It's our first appearance at the World Cup too. As you heard from Amber, and it's a mantra, isn't it? You hope to get out of the group first in the first instance. But who is to say if they do and get to knockout football stages? Could be really exciting. It's going to be exciting anyway. Now, we had a chat on the programme with Des yesterday, and Des believes that he has ME. But it hasn't been diagnosed. I'll tell you what, it was one of those interviews that you're sitting in the evening and you're thinking on it, and that's exactly how it was for me. He is, for the most part, on his own. He's difficulty going out shopping, and even something you might take for granted, like walking to the bathroom and back, can take an awful lot out of him, or making food for himself. And he believes that he should be in care. He's gone to the ED. They've done all the checks. They've said, look, we can't find anything wrong with you, and sent him home. He presented to the mental health services. He was there for a week. They says, look, there's nothing we can do for you. He was sent home, and he does feel somewhat, if not very helpless. Now, we had lots of advice that come in. That's been passed on to Des. So hopefully it's a low ebb, but it's an upward curve from here on. Louise didn't actually hear the interview as such, but was told that we had Des on talking about ME and has family experience off that and is going to have a chat with us. Louise, thanks for your time today.
Hi, Greg.
Right, it's a family member of yours that has ME.
Yeah, my daughter, she's 18.
Okay, and when was she first diagnosed with ME, Louise?
She was diagnosed, she first got ill in June, 4 years ago, 2019, and it took 15 months for a diagnosis.
And were there lots of, you know, was there lots of, well, we can't find anything wrong, bloods are coming clear, it could be psychological, that type of stuff?
Yeah. When we went down, like her symptoms were very, very physical. Mm. It was severe headaches was the main concern, memory loss. She just had no energy. And it was during the summer, and I had gone, all the blood tests come back clear. They told me it was probably hormones. So over the summer months, I put her on, supplements and, you know, pushed her to get outside for more fresh air and more sleep, things like that. Just your normal things whenever everything looks okay. Mm-hmm. And then in the September, literally the first day, she went back to school and she came home crying, severe headaches. I thought it was just, I didn't really know what it was. I was working that evening. She is highly intelligent, always has been, top grades in all her all school. So she was going into junior cert year, and I left her doing her homework, which normally took her, an hour and a half. And this was the first day back at school. And when I came home from work that night at 9 o'clock, she was still sitting, struggling with her homework and crying in pain. So alarm bells went off. But initially, I actually thought the school was giving too much work for the junior cert. Just the normal things that go through your head. So I spoke to the school and asked, did they load on the homework on the first day or what? And they actually had very little homework. So I started keeping track of the length of time Cassie was doing my daughter was doing her homework. And I was into the school talking to them. And then we realized it actually wasn't the work that was given. I went back to the GP. All her bloods were done again. Everything came back normal. Mm-hmm. But there was, he did find something in her heart. So he found a little murmur. So it was concerned that she had a hole in her heart. So spoke to the school. You know, everything stalled back. We eased off on her homework. She felt bad. She came home from school. And the symptoms didn't ease. We were trying to, you know, just trying to keep things as normal as possible. So she, all her results came back clear. When we did get her to the hospital, it came back that her heart was actually fine. It wasn't anything to the serum dose, but they did see, we did start keeping track of her heart rate mm-hmm. and her blood pressure, and they were extreme. You know, so her, she basically went from sitting down to standing up, and her blood pressure would just drop dramatically. She mm-hmm. was collapsing. She was losing her vision. When her blood pressure went high, she got really sick with it, nausea, and throwing up sometimes. So, but everything was ruled out that she had a hole in her heart, or that she'd, nothing physical was showing up at any test to do with her heart. So it went on. Now, I will say, you know, she was on paediatrics in Letterkenny Hospital, and we got Dr. Power, who was amazing. Mm-hmm. She had some experience with ME. Her secretary, whenever she worked in England, had it for 4 years as a teenager, and it went away. Now, that was really, so she knew the symptoms, but that was really as much as she knew about it. So she said to me initially that she thought it was, well, the word she used was in her head, which wasn't the best thing to say, but I knew what she meant. I knew stress, psychological, is the route that she was going down. So I just said, I don't care what it is. Can we get her tested? Can we check this out? So while she was in hospital, a doctor from CAMHS, the Children's Mental Health, came up to the hospital, did an hour assessment on her. I was with her. And at the end of it, she said there was no mental health issues. There was no distress. There was no depression. There was no anxiety. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. She said it's definitely something physical. Now, she suggested it was a rare form of epilepsy that she had. So then, this over and back, this was going on a long period of time then that we were in Cumlin. We were, she was in Letterkenny, just a lot in and out of Letterkenny all the time. So we were sent to Crumlin. She had an EEG with the 24-hour wires and that connected to her, and it came back no epilepsy. So they couldn't understand what was going on. Dr. Power, again, she wanted another psychological assessment done. I think she didn't trust the results. So I said, fine, whatever they suggested, I went for. You know, she was my daughter. She was 14, and this just was horrendous what she was going through. So there was another psychological assessment done. Again, everything came back that it was clear. Dr. Power wasn't happy. Now, we didn't know at this stage that Dr. Power did think it was ME, even though she didn't mention it to me. But her, as with the majority of all doctors, consultants, healthcare workers, it is that ME is psychological. So that was her belief. So she could not understand how all these symptoms were showing to her belief that it was ME, mm-hmm. but how she was passing all the psychological assessments. At the end of, she insisted that Dr. Anne-Marie Robertson, who is the head, who was anyway then, of CAMHS and Donegal, she insisted that she actually did the report. Mm-hmm. There was a 3-hour assessment between myself and Dr. Yeah. Roberts and my doctor, or Dr. Robertson and my daughter. And after 3 hours, she said she has absolutely no psychological issues. Right, okay. There's no depression, there's no anxiety.
So obviously everyone, including Dr. Power, wanted that ruled out. So can we sort of fast forward then as to what happened next? How do you get a diagnosis then for ME, Louise?
So I had, people had suggested lots of different things. Nobody had suggested ME. Mm. But after a long time in researching, somebody had said about chronic fatigue. So when I Googled that, I saw ME. I went on Facebook and went on looking for groups. And I came across a group in Northern Ireland called, Fibrom and ME. It's in Uri. And I contacted them. I went on to the group and some of the things that I was hearing about my daughter had.
Yeah.
So they were having Dr. William Weir, who is an infectious disease consultant in Harley Street in London. But he does, you know, specialize in ME and fibromyalgia. So we got an appointment. He came over from Belfast. So it was 15 months after my daughter started getting sick. And we got an appointment and we went up to see him. And it was him that diagnosed her.
And is there any, in terms of that, just for clarity, presumably he looked through her records on the basis of being nothing else, and as she described, is that how he made the diagnosis? Like, it wasn't necessarily a test as such, but he was able to eliminate everything else and recognised the symptoms as ME. Is that how he came to his diagnosis?
Basically, he did do a few tests on her as well.
And we only have about three or four minutes, unfortunately, Louise. So then what happened after that, if you don't mind saying?
Yeah, so we went back to Dr. Power. So everything that... So as she was a child, there was no real medication that she could go on.
Mm-hmm.
So he had suggested taking 4 Dirolite sachets a day to help regulate her blood pressure. So that was one of the symptoms. So with ME now, since last October, in the NICE guidelines, which is the medical guidelines, the graded exercise therapy and CBT has been removed from it.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, that is what was being recommended. Now, that is all fine for normal chronic fatigue. So people can get from it. Chronic fatigue is a symptom of a lot of different diseases,
mm-hmm.
like heart issues, lung issues, even cancer treatment. Chronic fatigue is a symptom. So the ME associations are actually trying to get chronic fatigue syndrome removed, deassociated with ME. They're trying to get it back to fully being recognised in its own name as myalgia and encephalomyelitis.
So then what changed then, just in the last couple of minutes, Louise, what changed then when your daughter turned 18?
So when she was 18, we attended a consultant in the Hermitage, Dr. Rizwan Uddin, who is a consultant in internal medicine, which basically is invisible diseases. So because of everybody that we had gone to over the last few years, we were just looked at as if we were crazy. I didn't understand what gaslighting was until my daughter had this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so upsetting, so frustrating. Like Des yesterday, I did actually last night listen to his interview, and just like him, people end up with mental health issues
mm-hmm.
because they are not being listened to and there is no help. It is not the other way around.
Yeah.
And doctors see it as the other way around. So we actually had a fantastic OT, a pediatric OT to start with, who explained to me about using your energy. So for the last 4 years, I was doing a strict, I was guiding her. I removed myself from work and literally just stayed at home with her. And I restricted everything that she was doing, but she wasn't able to do anything anyway. So she was happy with me giving her food and washing her hair and, you know, all those things. She did go through 2 years that she was barely able to get out of bed. It was just absolutely horrific. But bit by bit, I think by controlling everything that she was doing, she did start to do things the last maybe year and a half, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't had school. All her friends have done their Leaving Cert last year and this year. And she's been out of school for nearly 2 years. She's not able to do anything like that at all. So in February, she turned 18 and we got an appointment in the Hermitage with this consultant. And for the first time ever, it was just such a relief and such a blessing that he just talked to us as if we were normal. You know, normally it was, you're crazy, this isn't happening. And he started her on some medication. So he told us that he had a plan A, plan B, and plan C. And it would take time and we would work together. And he said that he could have her back to normal in 2 years. And
how is she getting on now?
Some medication. She's doing fantastic. She is meeting up with her friends 2-3 times a week. Now, I am driving her to her friends. So basically, I'm saving her energy for the things that she wants to do.
Do you see a pathway her to back to full fitness?
Yeah.
Or you do see that? There's hope there.
Yeah, well, I'm constantly open.
Eternally hopeful, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so from where she was, even this time 6 months ago, is completely different to now. Even in the last year and a half, it just was crazy. She couldn't even spend 20 minutes in school after Christmas last year, whereas now she's meeting up with her friends a couple of times a week. You know, so there's a big, big difference.
Okay, that's brilliant. Okay, so there is hope. Listen, thank you so much for that, Louise. I really appreciate your time today, and best wishes to your daughter. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, we'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.